This week on the show, we get you ready to pick all 67 games in the March Madness bracket. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, John Rook of Providence College, and Matt Stenberg of ESPN Radio will stop by to give their insight. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into a March Madness preview episode of Calling It. I'm your host, Alex Barth, and we are lucky to be joined by a basketball Hall of Famer, a guy who's been around the game, knows all the ins and outs, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. Bob, so thank you so much for taking the time and coming on today.
No, you're welcome. I'm glad to do it.
Bob had a great piece yesterday. We're recording this on Monday, so on the Sunday edition of the Boston Globe, comparing the March Madness to the Boston Marathon, kind of what it's like here. The first thing that stood out for me, Bob, I got to ask you, you said you went to a basketball game at the University of Alabama. As a Crimson Tide fan, what's the attitude like there for a non-Kentucky SEC basketball school?
They want to win. Any basketball coach at Alabama will tell you that, or any basketball coach at LSU will tell you that, and that they want to win. They like winning, and they like, when Bear Bryant was coaching, they had good teams with Sam Newton and Deion Douglas, those guys, Anthony Murray, T.I. Dunn. I mean, anyway, that goes back 40 years, but the fact is that they want to win, and they got a nice place to play, Coleman Coliseum. The SEC is loaded with nice arenas. Florida's got one back-to-back. They're the last team to win back-to-back. So don't think the SEC doesn't want to be competitive in basketball outside of Kentucky.
I think that was incredible. What was the number, 191 college basketball arenas you've been to?
That is correct. It's 191 venues for college basketball.
That is absolutely amazing.
Major arenas that the NBA uses where there have been tournament games. And I've been to and it does not include, because I'm being very fair, five places I've been to where I saw NBA exhibition games in a college gym or arena, but I've never seen that college team play at home. So I do not count Wyoming. I do not count Evansville. I do not count Toledo among the three places that I've seen NBA exhibitions, but not the actual university itself play.
On to this year's tournament. And this, to me, is one of the toughest years to pick. Do you ever remember seeing a region like this year's South region where really the top three seeds in the region could all have been potential one seeds?
See, it's not just a matter of how good they are this particular year. We all know what this is all about, why we're excited and intrigued. We're intrigued because those three teams have won a total of 24 national championships. They are three of the blue bloods. So if you're going to pick the top five programs in the history of college basketball, then you throw in Kansas and Indiana, and if you want to, or go six, or have to put Duke in there. That's it. So half of that, the all-time six, are in the same region. And by the way, where none of them belong geographically, Carolina does. The two of them don't belong geographically. I shouldn't say that. Kentucky, they're Midwest more than anything, really. Anyway, fact of the matter, the jury will disregard that last statement. Three of them are in there, and it makes it intriguing because of their blue bloods. It's just rare to have that kind of elite historical convergence in a one region in an NCAA tournament.
Gonzaga this year is back into a one seed. They were a couple years ago. They've really been a factor the last 4 or 5 years. When's the last time you saw a run from a mid-major this impressive?
A run. This is a run that goes back to 1999. So the answer is this is probably the greatest in the history of threatening to do something outside what we now refer to as the power conference. It's a phrase that did not exist, of course, 20 years ago, but it does now. And Gonzaga is outside that mainstream. But they have been in the tournament since 99 when they went to the Final Eight. They were, in fact, the last obstacle before UConn got to win. It got to the Final Four. But they've basically been a disappointment to their followers in that they've only gone back to the Final Eight once despite having many good teams. And this is the second time now that they've had a team that actually was ranked as high as number one. And pressure's on. And they're going to have a big hurdle. Huge obstacle, a team they've already beaten, but beaten without what can arguably be called their best player, and now that best player is there. And so if and when we have a Western Finals of Gonzaga and Arizona, Arizona will be A, motivated, and B, bolstered since the first game.
Arizona does have to get through Florida Gulf Coast to get to that point. Not saying they won't. we saw a couple years ago, one of the first 15 seeds to beat a 2. They're back in it this year. What does it do for these teams when they become one of these Cinderella upset teams, when they get in years later? Do you see that kind of carrying momentum?
Got to have some recruiting advantage, I think, for them in the world that they recruit from. I think it has to give them an advantage. They can point to the pride. We made a real serious run in 2013. We captivated America, Dunk City. Our coach went on to bigger and better things as a springboard. But I think it has to help them. But there have been other teams that have been little dominant teams in their region for a while. Right now, one of them is down, but they've had Murray State had a run where they were seemed to be in there every year. They weren't going too far, but they were in there every year. I think when you can point to the fact that you're in the tournament a lot, for example, in America East, Vermont and Albany can both point to a run that in their world in which they inhabit, that they have an advantage over people in their league because they can say, hey, we've gotten there. We know how to get there. That's what it means. It's a we know how to get there little pounding of the chest.
You mentioned the America East, Vermont, one of three New England teams in it this year, along with URI, and then Providence is a play-in. Does it concern you at all, the state of college basketball in New England as it is right now? Not a strong representation this year, and BC, who's traditionally the powerhouse, has maybe had their worst couple-year stretch in program history.
It's look, I'm a BC grad. I'm really upset and embarrassed at the deterioration of the program and to be in this level of a standard of ineptitude as BC is. I believe it's 17-73 in the ACC the last few years. It's pretty bad. It's terrible. UMass just fired Derek Kellogg after 9 years because it's fallen apart there. It's still, and UConn had a highly disappointing year. They'll be back. Don't worry about UConn. I don't know what went wrong specifically this year. They just never got started and got going, but I'm not giving up on UConn. Providence is in the tournament, and Eddie Cooley's done a terrific job there. But, no, it's not what we would like, okay? I'll admit that. Don't sleep on Rhodey. I got Rhodey winning, by the way, in the first round. And I'm getting the pension a little bit. So I got them beating Creighton, but then they're playing Oregon. That's not going to be very helpful. But they have a shot, by the way. Don't be stunned if they upset Oregon. But BC's the real issue here. They're horrible. They're brutal. It's awful. And not only that, but they had two pretty good players, one of whom I have not heard an update on his injury, but Bowman got hurt, Kai Bowman, in the tournament, had to leave the game, and may have a serious knee injury. That sets him back even more for next year, if you can believe that.
Do you think, you mentioned URI, who is your most surprising, your big upset pick of the year, your big upset lock of the year?
I got Gulf Coast. I got Florida Gulf Coast beating Florida State, but no tech, just because it's in state, they'll be motivated. I just for the hell of it, I picked that. The one I really believe, though, because it's not an upset. 10-7 is not an upset. My belief is that upsets, quote-unquote, stop at 4-13. And once you get to 5-12, history teaches us 5-12 is happens all the time. So 5-12, 6-11, 7-10, and God knows, 8-9, they're not upsets. They're minimal separation among all those kind of teams. But Wichita State is the most underseeded team in the tournament. The most underseeded. Minnesota is probably the most overseeded at 5, but Wichita State is clearly the consensus choice as the most underseeded team. I expect them to beat Dayton.
I got to tell you, Bob, I'm feeling real good about my bracket. I wasn't so sure last night, but I have Gulf Coast, I have Rhodey, I have Wichita State, and I have Minnesota losing. So
well,
thank you.
Just because I said it, because let me tell you something. I'm going to be full utter disclosure. I don't care, you know, about brackets. I mean, I don't care about a winning contest. I'm not in any. I filled out a bracket this morning to be on Tony Kornheiser's podcast at 20 of 8 in the morning, and my wife said, how can you do it that fast? And I said, because I don't care. I don't want to be held to this. Society demands, Kornheiser demands, everybody demands brackets. Okay, fine, I'll fill out a bracket. I just want to watch the games. I truly don't care about it, about brackets. So, I heard a tale this morning, and this tells you all you need to know about brackets. And I'm sure you've heard these kind of stories yourself and other people too. Reese Davis was on ESPN this morning, and he said his daughter, I think it was Reese Davis because it was the voice I was driving, but I think it was Reese Davis. Either he or Trey Wingo, I think it was Davis. He said, my daughter is not she's in the arts. She's not a sports fan in the least. She won a pool 2 years ago. She won the pool with all the sports fans that were doing all the research and had all the knowledge, simply by picking every game on the basis of who had the best record.
That's incredible.
If a team won 24 and the other team won 22, she picked the 24. And she knew nothing about schedule, about seeding, about who was hurt, about nothing. She just knew, well, they're 24. They must be better than the 22. And she won the poll. And she knows nothing. You know, it's fruitless to get all this research. And I'll say one more thing before we go. I know, I'll just get it out there.
Okay.
This year, all right, I got Duke winning on a whim. They're the hottest team of the good teams. They are the hottest current team of the good teams. Arizona's probably the second hottest team of the good teams. Okay. If no matter who wins, and it's down to about 7 or 8. I think we all know that. No matter who wins, if we were to replay the tournament 6 times, 7 times, we would have a different winner this year. That's what I believe.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, thank you for coming on, taking the time.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to the show. We're now joined by John Rook. John, among many jobs, is the voice of the Providence College Friars men's basketball team. On the phone with us from Dean College. John, how are you doing today?
Great, Alex. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing well. It's the first Monday of tournament week. You got to enjoy it. And your week starts early, actually. Providence will have a play-in game against USC. What has the play-in game done? Not the 16-16, but having two 11 seeds, two higher seeds, play a play-in game. As somebody who's seen this now a couple times, what does that do for the dynamics of the tournament?
You know, that's really a great question. I don't know that it does so much for the dynamics of the tournament as it does for the overall well-being of the team that actually survives it, because there's still a feeling, I think, that if you're involved in a first four game that you're not really quote-unquote in the field. You are in the field. The field is 68 teams, all 68 teams, including the low-lier 16, seeded teams that come from, low-major conferences, just like they're in the league because they played their way in. They followed the rules, they won their tournament, and they got a bid. But having the other first four games featuring at large teams, largely from major conferences, I won't speak directly for the selection committee, but I understand the idea of it a few years ago was because sometimes it's so tough to make a decision between teams of like resumes that they hopefully just kind of go in and grab a few. And then they have these teams kind of play off against each other to see which one truly is the better one. And frankly, I don't mind that kind of a theory, to be honest with you. It sounds pretty good. I mean, if you're good enough to win a game, then you should win that game. If you're not good enough to win, then you'll probably lose that game, and you probably, you'd lose in the field of 64 anyway. So I totally get that. It is still part of the tournament, and I know the NCAA committee has tried to do a particularly strong job in ensuring that, hey, this is a field of 68. It's just that this first portion of the tournament is called the first four for a reason. And then you get matched up, as an 11 seed or a 12 seed, because there's a group of 12s that also play off against each other. And then you match up according to, relative strength. So it just seems to be a logjam of teams with this ability every year. So that's why they set it up like to have the 11s and the 12s play off on against each other.
What has Providence done in the post-Chris Dunn era to keep themselves relevant, get themselves back into the tournament?
Well, it's a little bit of a surprise, to be honest with you. I mean, I think after you lose two NBA draft picks, you don't ever really expect to go back immediately next year, to the tournament. You always hope, but it's reasonable to assume that, you probably won't be good enough. But I think what this team did early is define itself as a defensive team. And then when Providence has not had success, I mean, they have won 20 games, but when they haven't had success this year, they've kind of gotten away from their core identity. That is to be a tough, defensive-minded team whose offense basically is predicated on defense starting it. And so they played defense well enough, for instance, last Thursday night at Madison Square Garden against Creighton to win that game, but then they turned the ball over by shooting themselves in the foot 22 times. And you can't do that. You can't give up 22 possessions or give the opponent 22 additional possessions and expect to beat a team any good at this level of play. So I can tell you right now, I don't care what kind of defense you play. If you turn the ball over 22 times, you're going to lose. And that's what happened to Providence on Thursday, and that's probably why they're in this, you know, Wednesday game in Dayton, Ohio to begin with. But if Providence can come play with the same kind of defensive effort that they did against Creighton, which is one of the best shooting teams in the country, they'll beat USC on Wednesday. It's all about Providence being able to take care of the ball. And the Friars, and this is with all due respect to USC, which I think is deserving as an NCAA team. Some people didn't seem to think so out of the Pac-12, but you know, I certainly thought that their credentials were smart enough. And I think this is a good matchup for Providence if they take care of the ball.
And these two teams went at it last year in the first round as an 8-9 matchup, went down to the final seconds. Does this year's game have shape up to be as exciting as last year's?
Hope so. Hope so. I mean, it doesn't get much better than, you know, a last-second inbounds play and scoring and then and winning a game to advance in the tournament. So it was truly, I think last year at the time, it was the first March Madness moment of the entire tournament. You could have certainly the same thing happen on a first four Wednesday, which would also be pretty cool. You know, I honestly believe that Providence has the pedigree, and certainly Providence, and even if USC wins the game on Wednesday, if they survive it, I think SC could be the same way. The team that wins that game could actually go in and give SMU quite the battle in Tulsa, and have a good chance to win the game. I think in Providence's case, I think they match up pretty good with SMU because they have a relatively short rotation. And then if you survive that, then you're going to go play third-seeded Baylor. And Baylor's dropped a little of late, although I think Baylor's supremely athletic. It'd just be interesting to see, you know, how well they can take advantage of their inside game. But there's an opportunity there, I think, for this team to advance out of the first four into the Sweet 16, which has been done, once or twice before. And I think that team could come from either Providence or Southern Cal, whoever survives Wednesday.
So you have Providence. You also have URI as another 11 seed. They'll be two of the three New England representatives in the tournament outside of Vermont. Is this the high point? Do you remember Rhode Island basketball being this strong of a national presence at any point?
Yeah, well, 20 years ago was the last time that two teams from Rhode Island made it into the tournament. That's when PC and URI last made it together. So it's been a long time, and I know for Rhode Island fans, you know, they haven't made the tournament in 18 years. And for Providence, this is their fourth straight year to make the tournament. So it's been a little bit of different road traveled by both programs. And I know Rhodey fans have been supremely frustrated over the last few years, and you go down just almost any year in that 18 that they've had a winning team and they've fallen short in the postseason. So that's kind of added to that frustration. But Rhode Island, we knew going into this year that they were a tournament-worthy team. Then they had some injury problems during the course of the year. And then they had a low water mark just a month ago when they lost a home game to Fordham, and everybody thought the season was over. And that just goes to show you. And same thing with Providence before they ripped off six straight wins in the Big East. The season's not over. You have to keep playing. And both teams managed to keep playing, and they both played their way in. So this is certainly a great moment. It's not the first time it's ever happened. It's the first time in a long while that it's happened. But, you know, I think most people around here kind of feel like, look, both of these programs have had their great moments in the past. There's no reason why now this can't continue for a little bit.
The ACC had a great year. Everybody's talked about them being the conference. They were the elite conference. The Big 12, once again, had a strong showing. The Big East had a competitive year, but I feel like it kind of flew under the radar. Are people underlooking that conference?
Well, if they're underlooking the conference, then they're not watching college basketball. That's what I would tell you. You know, that's why, you know, I mean, I hear, you know, people call the Big East underrated. I don't know how you can underrate a conference that is either 1, 2, or 3 in the conference RPI all year long. How is that underrated? So, you know, the ACC got 9 teams in because they got 15 teams in the league. Now, that means, you know, I know the ACC is a good league, but they got 15 teams. The Big East has 10 teams, and they just placed 7 teams out of their 10, 70%. That's extraordinary. The Big 12 did that, I think, last year, maybe the year before that as well. So that hasn't happened all that often. And so for a team that, for a league that has 10 teams in it to send 70% of its membership to the field of 68, I think that's extraordinary. And so if the Big East is flying in under the radar, it simply means that you're not watching college basketball.
One last question. We're talking with John Rook of Providence College. He's the voice of the Priors. And question for you, John, Is it any different for you going to call a tournament game than it is any other game during the season? Does your routine change? Maybe does your type of call change at all, or is it just business as usual for you?
You know, that's a great question. And I would tell you, Alex, that the basic answer is no, nothing really changes. But there's always a little added excitement to it because it is, you know, the dance. It is the tournament. It's what everybody strives to get to, whether you're a player or a coach or an administrator or a broadcaster. You always want to be a part of it. For me now, this is 10 NCAA tournaments in 28, 29 years of being with the program. So, you know, that averages out to roughly one per 3 years. And then I think that's actually a pretty good streak, even though it's been four in a row. And now I want to keep going. I don't want to back out at all. It's kind of fun to go to and be, you know, and be part of, and, you know, be relevant in the college sports scene. But, you know, so but there's also a little bit of urgency to it because, you know, when, you know, you lose, you're done. That's it. And the season comes to a crashing halt. So I think there's always a little element of energy there that might not exist during a regular season game in, say, snowy Cincinnati, you know, in the middle of February, you know, when you're playing Xavier or something like that. But I'd say also in the Big East Conference, and again, if you've watched the games at all, you understand that, you know, in a league like that where you play everybody home and home, there's always a little special something going on when you're going on the road to play a Butler or a Cincy or a Villanova, or one of those teams is coming into your building and you've got a sellout crowd of 12 or 13,000 in your building and the place is just jumping. It's electric. So, you know, there's a little bit of that carryover. But I think overall, you also don't try to put, you know, too many eggs in the basket. You try to call it as evenly as you possibly can, and just have fun with it, just like you hope that the players do.
John Rook, voice of the Providence Friars, thank you so much for coming on the program, and enjoy your trip to Dayton for the first four.
Thanks, pal. Anytime.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
We are back live on Callin' It. We're now joined from Virginia Beach by Matt Stenberg of ESPN Radio 94.1 down there in Virginia. Matt, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, man. Really appreciate it.
So Virginia's going to be heavily focused on in this tournament. Three teams, two of them in the same bracket between Virginia and Virginia Tech. You have VCU in there as well, but we'll start with VA and VT. And I've seen a little bit earlier here, Virginia's a popular upset pick. What about this team makes people think that they're going to bow out in the first round?
Well, look, one thing about UVA is that they have a tremendous defense, but they can't get it done offensively. We saw that happen last year in the Elite Eight when they had a double-digit lead going into the second half against Syracuse and then totally crapped the bed in that one. They've had a lot of those kinds of games this year. They've lost a lot of their starters from last year that were offensive juggernauts, to say the least. You know, Malcolm Brogdon and Anthony Gill were both dominating offensive forces for UVA, and they haven't really found that go-to guy. Sure, you have London Parentis, but he can't get the job done all by himself. So, I mean, look, UNC Wilmington, one of those teams that isn't used to losing, 29-5 on the year. So it wouldn't shock me one bit if UVA ends up dropping in the first round.
And then right above that in the 8-9 matchup, you have Virginia Tech against Wisconsin in an 8-9. Let's say Virginia Tech does pull it off. How will they match up against the defending national champion Villanova Wildcats?
Well, I mean, I think they could match up all right because, look, Virginia Tech, they're not one of those teams. They're the exact opposite of UVA. They don't play a lot of defense, but they can score. So if you can try and outscore Villanova, I mean, good luck. But, you know, Villanova is no slouch on defense. So I think that they're not going to have much success against the Wildcats. But if for whatever reason they can find the hot hand from beyond the arc and force Villanova to try and spread things out defensively, they could try to keep it close.
Finally, you have VCU there down in that region with Gonzaga that seems to be kind of up for grabs with anybody. They would match up potentially against Arizona in the second round. Obviously, everybody's familiar with their heroics from a couple years ago. Is this another Cinderella story kind of team, or are they just what they are, a 10 seed?
I don't think this team has the magic that they had in the past. I mean, their conference isn't super strong like it was back when they had those other teams. So I like Arizona to get to the Elite Eight in that situation.
Which Virginia team do you think makes it the furthest of the three?
I'd probably say UVA, even though that totally contradicts what I said, the fact that I think that they could go out in the first round. But if they can figure out a way to score, I mean, that, obviously you're not worried about that defense. So, I mean, I don't know if Virginia Tech has what it takes to even get past Wisconsin in the first round, because I don't really like that matchup. But I think that UVA, if they can figure out a way to get the ball into the basket, then they can get by UNC Wilmington.
Overall, a very strong year for the ACC. Virginia Tech among, 15 ACC teams in the tournament this year. Is this a year to go all in on the ACC? I know some people have three, maybe even four ACC teams in their final four.
I mean, this is symbolic to what we used to see in the Big East like 5-6 years ago, and you'd have so many teams from one conference making it in. And it seemed like if you tried to pick those teams, they didn't do very well because they're so used to beating each other up during the regular season. They come in tired and they have to deal with each other in the tournament as well. So, you know, not just the process of elimination of these teams knocking each other off. You also have the issue of just the, you know, downright tiredness of all of these teams. So I don't know if I'm sold. I'd say that Duke probably has the best chance to go the furthest, although they will have to, you know, ultimately match up with Villanova. But I think Duke is the best team in the ACC right now.
Who do you think maybe is the most undersold team in the ACC? I know a lot of people have talked about Notre Dame a little low as a 5 seed. Who do you think didn't get enough respect, maybe because they had to play such a tough in-conference schedule this year?
Honestly, I would say that the team that was probably overlooked the most, and I know that it might not, you know, completely reflect it, but I would say is Duke, because I thought that they were deserving of a 1 seed. They obviously had that, stumble through the middle of the season when Coach K was out and Grayson Allen was, tripping people, but they've bounced back tremendously. So I think that that's a team that I think you're going to have to watch out for, as crazy as it sounds, because Duke is one of those, you know, notorious programs. But that's the team that I would say in the ACC. I mean, sure, Notre Dame, maybe, but I don't think that they can really handle some of the other teams in the conference.
What is your strategy? And I know you've done pretty well in the past picking March Madness games. What's your strategy for picking a bracket?
Actually, I am very bad at picking brackets, man. It's pretty downright embarrassing. I'm also running our office pool this year for the first time, so I had to Google how to run an office pool. So I think I figured that out. But I mean, strategy wise, I think that sure you can look smart, you know, in the first couple rounds by trying to get those upsets. But I think as you go further and further along, my strategy would just be go chalk, because the odds of you having, you know, a successful bracket because you picked all the upsets versus picking the winner, pick the winner. Be smart when you get to the Elite Eight in the Final Four.
Matt, we'll give you a chance here to make a bold prediction. We've been asking people this the last couple of weeks. It will be on tape, so you can either seem like a genius or you're just some guy trying to get his 15 minutes. Is this the year a 16 seed beats a 1 seed?
No.
No, you're not even going to take the shot at it just in case?
Not even going to take the shot. Look, I mean, these teams are scrubs that get into the 16 spot, and these teams are number ones for a reason. This isn't the year. It will happen eventually, but I think that all four of these number one seeds are going to advance.
Matt Stenberg from ESPN Virginia. You can find him on Twitter at MattStenberg17, or just click hashtag sports. He's probably hanging out in that conversation as well. Matt, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Barth. Really appreciate it. Anytime.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
The ball is two, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star.
We're joined by our two producers now, Jimmy Young and Mike Zagos, on the phone. We're going to let you know what we're doing for March Madness, and it all ties into that. The three of us have filled out our brackets. We are all set. I'll probably tweak and tinker a little bit. I'm sure you guys will too. And I know Mike will, because Mike was telling me off the air, he fills out his bracket probably differently than you do. Mike, why don't you enlighten us on that?
I do. So generally people will go through, try to find their fun first round upsets, and I'm all a supporter of upsets, right? But instead, that locks me in to things I might not want later on. So I kind of do things backwards. I'll go through and look at the bracket like 4 16-team tournaments. And whoever I think can come out of those tournaments, I'll fill right into my Final Four and work my way backwards. Because in past years, you know, let's just say, for example, I like UNC Wilmington over Virginia. You know, that might lock me into saying that someone in the second round, let's say a Florida or someone like that, would have to win. And what happens if you don't really like Florida that much? So you can see how the snowball starts to roll in a weird direction that you might not like. And I find that if I just pick Duke, for example, to come out of that bracket, which I like, it's much easier to work my way back and pick some fun upsets over teams I didn't think were going to go far anyway. So it's a little illogical, but it's found a way to work the past few years.
See, now I'm personally more of a ESPN insider, comb over all the stats, the numbers, the analytics. And I'm normally not a big analytics guy in sports, but I find in March Madness, it works. Go figure, the most unpredictable tournament of the year. But yeah, I'm combing through, seeing the decision trees, the seed pairings, all that. Jimmy, how'd you pick your bracket?
I play the role of the office secretary. If I like a, you know, a team, I make it up as I go along. I look at the brackets and I...
Well, we all make it up as we go along.
I do. When I'm looking at the brackets? Oh, absolutely. If I like the team, if I like the storyline, like, you know, eventually I have Louisville and Kentucky playing each other because I love the Patino-Calipari matchup. I always look for the good story. Sometimes you get absolutely burnt and embarrassed. But after all, if you are playing the role of the office secretary, I think I can get away with it.
Hey, that's got some credit, too, because I don't know if you guys saw, but the Illinois State coach really called out the NCAA for you know, I don't want to say the word fixing, but putting some big money markets together. For example, Villanova and Duke are going to play at the Garden in the Elite Eight if they both get there. That seems a little too good to be true. Wichita State and Kentucky are going to play each other again. It's funny how these little things come together. So narratives are kind of good.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Duke, Mike. Two of the three of us both have Duke in the finals, and I was back and forth between them and Kentucky. We all kind of picked similar Final Fours. The one exception in the three of them seems to be in the West, where we have representatives from Arizona, Gonzaga, and Jimmy, I think you picked Notre Dame out of that one.
No, I didn't. I picked Gonzaga.
Did you pick Gonzaga too?
Yes.
So we have two from Gonzaga. Mike, you pick Gonzaga, am I right?
Love the Zags, yep.
So two from Gonzaga who I just don't see, and one from Arizona. That one seems to be wide open. Let's actually, you know what, before we get to that, let's talk about the South. Is this the most brutal region you've ever seen? There are three teams in there that should be one seeds between UNC, Kentucky, and UCLA.
The South is tough in name. I mean, that, you know, you have the Blue Bloods in there. That's just if you go through history, they have more titles than any other region, obviously. But I just feel like UNC was the best team all year long. If they don't lose to Duke in that last game, everyone pencils them right into the Final Four, I think. Can they lose? Sure, anyone can. But from top to bottom, they're just so talented. I think they just steamroll their way through anyway.
So let's play a little game now. This is back from my days working with Jimmy 5-6 years ago on our old show, Back Talk. It's called Defend Your Upset, and it's exactly what it sounds like. We're just going to go around the table. Which upset stood out to you guys that somebody else picked? And you got to step up and defend it. And I'll start with the two of you. Matt Stenberg talked about this on the show in the last segment, that UNC Wilmington is a threat to beat Virginia. Now, I think the ACC was strong, battle-tested. UNC Wilmington is that year-in, year-out, one-and-done team. What do you guys think is UNC Wilmington's difference this year? And why Virginia out in the first round? They're a team that historically doesn't get upset much.
Go ahead, Mike. I'm going to let you go first because mine is basic. 12 over a 5. Always happens. Done.
That works.
All right,
that
so Jimmy's just playing the numbers.
Hey, it, they don't lie.
No, and I know I've heard really, good things about North Carolina Wilmington too. Go ahead.
You know, last year they impressed me. If they put up, I think, 85 points on Duke last year and they lost, no one's saying they're a stalwart defensive team or anything, but if you put up 85 in a game, you have a pretty good chance to win. And let's just say they did win that game. Everyone would have them this year. But for me, the point here is I just don't like Virginia. I never have. All my friends and coworkers alike make fun of me because they always win. They're always a top seed, and I will never pick them. Last year, at least they had Malcolm Brogdon to kind of get the offense going. I just don't see how they score the ball. They just struggle so much to put it in the hoop. They don't have very good offensive players. And if you have a team that can put up 85, I mean, for example, Virginia put up fewer than 60 points 9 times this year. I can't imagine that being enough, whether their defense is good enough or not. So, you know, maybe the odds aren't with Wilmington as far as Vegas goes, but I would kind of be shocked if they didn't win.
See, now I have them in the Elite Eight. I have them beating Villanova, making it very far. So I'm hoping that offense shows up. Isn't it funny, Mike, like you're just saying, with upsets, it's almost like you're picking against the higher seeds than the lower seeds. Almost, oh, well, I don't think this team can win. It's whatever team happens to play them that you're going to go and pick. I don't think I've ever picked many upsets where I'm picking the lower team to win. I feel like more often I'm picking the higher team to lose. I don't know if you're the same way or if your whole backwards magic thing works differently.
I think it's both, honestly, because in my head, you know, I want to be the hero that has Virginia to lose in the first round. But truthfully, it comes down to the fact that I just don't think they have a deep run in them. So whether they lose in the first round or the second round, I'd rather take the shot that they lose to the top seed if they're not going to go deep anyway. And, you know, with all upset points and all these different pools and stuff like that, it kind of works out.
Okay, you guys got an upset for me because my bracket's a little it's one of my more conservative brackets, but it is a little out there, especially in the earlier rounds.
Who'd you pick out of the South for the K-State Wake Forest play-in winner against Cincinnati?
I had Cincinnati, but I have them losing to UCLA. I was so ready to pencil UCLA into the Final Four, and then I saw they were in that bracket of death, and I was so disappointed. I love Lonzo Ball. I've been calling him the Aaron Rodgers of college basketball because his form is absolutely atrocious, but he makes it work. I was so ready for UCLA to go. I actually have them beating Kentucky, but UNC's just impressed me too much. There's nothing I can pick against them until you get to Kansas. The thing that's bugging me about Kansas is no team that's lost in the first round of their conference tournament has ever won at all. Now, Kansas could be the team that changes that. You know, it's a year-to-year thing, but that's kind of in the back of my head. I have Kansas in there right now, but that is in very soft pencil. The eraser's right over the paper on that one. I don't know about them or Duke.
I love Kansas, but I got a good one to call you out on.
Okay.
I am not a Vermont fan, and I see that you have them winning in the first round.
Not a big Catamount follower there, are you?
There's nothing.
No, does anybody outside of New England know that they're the Catamounts? Do they know that's the mascot?
There's a lot of
I know it now because I watched that conference final, and it was just tough basketball on the eyes. And so immediately when I saw Vermont, I had to cross them out pretty quickly.
So I'll tell you this because I covered the America East last year for UMass Lowell, who's not tournament eligible till next year anyway.
Well, that's going to be a big sleeper one day.
Oh, yeah, huge change. Huge change for the Riverhawks, I'm sure. hey, they have one good player, Jahad Thomas. Anyway, that was just to prove I know. Anyway, I saw Vermont, and they were tearing through the conference, and everybody was saying, oh, they're going to go, and I didn't think they were going to end up winning the conference tournament because they're very much a live-by-the-three, die-by-the-three team, and I thought one of the teams, probably Albany, could catch them on an off night. They won the conference tournament. They were consistent enough. Granted, it was a little close at the end, but they were consistent enough to win the America East, which is not the best conference, but it's a very tightly contested conference. There are a lot of teams that can get you any day of the week. So for Vermont to show their battle test enough to get through that, and I'm not a huge fan of Purdue to begin with. That was a team that I saw as being a potential upset in the first round. And again, it's more picking against teams than for teams. You know, Vermont is a 13. Would I pick them against Butler's 4? No, probably not. But the combination of me not being a huge fan of Purdue, and I like battle-tested teams going to the tournament. I like teams that are coming in hot, and that is Vermont. Yeah, I have them winning a game. Iowa State, too. Look, I normally love the Big 12, and you can ask people who've been in pools with me before. My bracket is always Big 12 heavy, and it always bites me. RJ Hunter, all of it. It kills me. Missouri a couple years ago when they were still in the Big 12, I had them in the Final Four. They lost in the first round. This is the first year I'm swearing off the Big 12. Iowa State's the only team I have winning, besides Kansas, winning more than two games. But if Vermont wins one, Big 12 teams tend to choke. So, yeah, I like Vermont.
Part of me tries to throw all that out the window. Conferences kind of go away. Once you step on the court, man, you're just trying to beat the guy in front of you, and none of it matters. But I can't beat you up too much. I do have a 13 over a 4 with Eastern Tennessee State beating Florida, so you can rip on me all day for that.
So what is with that? Because I've seen that actually being a popular 12-13 matchup, UNC Wilmington and Eastern Tennessee State.
I have them both, yep.
Florida, outside of two losses to Vanderbilt, I thought was a very good team this year. I'm surprised they're being picked as much of an upset as they are.
You know, I have two reasons. One, I just really don't think the SEC is good at all, aside from Kentucky, and even they're down this year. And Egbunu for Florida, he's their rim protector. He was their rim protector. He's out for the game. They are shallow up front. And if they can't physically impose themselves on a mid-major, which is what your advantage normally is as a power conference, then to me, it's a 50-50 shot that they lose the game. And like I said last time, I mean, if I don't see Florida going deep, which I don't think they can beat Villanova anyway, then why not take a shot? So it's a gamble, but I think it might pay off.
So we'll let you guys get a chance here to get this. Jimmy, something real quick.
I too have that ETSU. That would be Eastern Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad it's not Western Tennessee State because they're horrible. I have no idea if there is a Western
I actually went with Eastern Tennessee and Middle Tennessee.
See, so I went Middle Tennessee. I have Middle Tennessee. I have Middle Tennessee winning two games. I have them beating Brad Stevens' Butler Bulldogs.
Last
year, I had Michigan State in the finals. Eastern Tennessee whooped them, and I will never get over it. So if this team is ever in, I'm picking them. Giddy Potts, I saw that guy in my nightmares throughout the March of last year. So he's going to go hard.
And isn't that what makes this tournament, by the way? You find out about players in these small, obscure schools that you've never heard of.
And then Danny Ainge drafts them.
Right.
It's the best.
Kelly Olynyk, R.J. Hunter, go on and on.
That's interesting. Sure.
So I'll get you guys a chance to get this on tape because we've been asking our guests this the last couple of weeks. Just, you know, you can take the risk here. We have 37 followers on Twitter, 38 actually. We picked one up this morning. Hopefully more after our big announcements at the end of the segment, which is coming up very soon. Again, we're talking with Mike Zago and Jimmy Young, our producers. Will a 16 seed beat a 1 seed this year?
No.
Man, I want to say yes so badly.
Say yes. We've had so many no's. Just give me a yes, please.
All right, Villanova's going down. I'm not a fan of them. They're tough, but they don't have a ton of talent. They're going down.
Not only does he pick a 16 seed to win, he picks which one will win. Or you don't, because it's a play-in game, actually. So you didn't pick a team. You picked which one seed will lose. You didn't pick which 16 seed will win.
That's been the trend the whole time. Pick a team you don't like and just pray that they go down so you're a hero. That's all I got for me.
Hey, all right. We have Mike Zago on tape now. Not only will a one seed lose, it will be Villanova. Okay, that will do it for us. Jimmy Young and Mike Zago, thanks for coming on. I would also like to thank Bob Ryan, John Rook, and Matt Stenberg for lending their analysis earlier in the program. So you can check us out on Twitter at Colnett Podcast. Enjoy March Madness. I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Calling It with Alex Barth. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.